This is Jenny Allen, and you are listening to the Made for This podcast. Kate, we're going to talk about probably the most important part of this story, which is choosing what to do with our emotions, because I believe everybody now is on board with, okay, emotions are a gift. They are good. They are from God. But we all know the crazy ways emotions have led us down wrong paths, caused us to say things we regret, possibly hurt us from other people and their emotions. So we all know that emotions can go terribly wrong if not submitted to the Lord. So at this point, we have talked about feeling, we have talked about naming, we've talked about noticing, we've talked about sharing, and now we are going to talk about choosing what to do with it.
And a lot of y'all have been really uncomfortable until this point. Like, you've just been waiting for this point. And so I just want to say that we see you and...
Well, I think a lot of people are waiting for this part of the book too, because it's like, great, okay, I feel sad.
Right.
What now?
Right.
What am
it
I going to do
It still doesn't
with
feel
this?
Forward moving.
Yeah.
Well, I was just reading, you know, the first page and... I'll just read it to y'all. In high school, I dated a golfer, so I used to watch a lot of golf. And my favorite golfer to watch was Tiger Woods. Blah, 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 blah. And she goes on about the PGA and golf. What did the first line have to do with
Nothing.
Anything about the story? Did you feel like it was a flex that you... I feel like that's kind of a dorky thing in high school.
Well, I genuinely, like, when I'm writing and telling the story,
right.
The reason I knew so much about golf in Tiger Woods' days was because I watched it every Sunday with my boyfriend. So
it's yeah. It's a good start, you know?
I dated a golfer.
It's like a funny first line of a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Love that for you.
Yeah.
Tell me why you love Tiger Woods.
Well, you know, back in that time when I was watching him, it was the story in the book talks about he was the greatest golfer of all time. Like, you didn't want to be alive as a golfer, professional golfer, when Tiger Woods was playing at his best because there was no beating him. I mean, he just was winning everything, and it felt like the whole game of golf professionally revolved around Tiger Woods. It still does when he plays sometimes. You know, it's such a Michael Jordan type thing, but it's such an individual sport. So it really was consuming to be him. And then he falls off the rails, you know, and I have totally seen the Tiger Woods documentary.
Totally. Yeah.
So good, by the way, on Netflix. And I watched that whole journey and it really began in his mind. And I guess, you know, when I thought about opening this part, I thought of that story because I feel like so often we think it's not going to affect everything about us, but his whole life fell apart. Mm. It wasn't one part of his life. It wasn't just his game. It was everything about his life fell apart because everything spun out of control mentally for him, and it affected his decisions and everything about him. And so that can be us, right? We can allow these emotions to spin out of control and we think it's just going to affect this one subject of our lives. But the reality is it ends up affecting every single part of our lives. So this really is a huge and crucial step of the process of feeling our emotions and understanding our emotions and growing emotionally is deciding what are we going to do about them when we feel all of these things.
That's so good. And I, on page 163, it says, faith isn't summoned, it grows. It grows because of a relationship, not your willpower. I think this dynamic in the Christian walk is such a hard one to grasp in some ways because it's so opposite to the way the rest of the world works and the rest of everything works.
Yeah.
So talk about this as far as choosing to do this with God, which so much of, I mean, essentially this is just sanctification. Like this is.
Yeah, it is.
Choosing obedience.
If you don't know the word, it is the way that we grow and become more like Christ in our lifetime. And I need everyone to understand and frame all of this conversation about our emotions with this very important fact that there is no arrival point. Mm-hmm. There is just navigating it better and better and understanding ourselves and understanding God and understanding our circumstances better. There's not a sense of, man, this is the right way to grieve. This is the right way mm-hmm. to be sad. And you're going to figure it out. And at the end of this book, you're going to close it. Mm-hmm. And then you'll feel your emotions right.
And if you do it enough, one day you will be healed. And that will be a state of being.
No. And again, it's why I always talk about Pilgrim's Progress, I think, in every book, mm-hmm. in every season of every podcast. And the reason why
I knew
I was going
to
go here. Because it is the best description of the Christian life I've ever seen. It is an allegory that Christian becomes a Christian early on. His name is Christian and he is a Christian. And everything's hard, you know, and but everything teaches him something. Mm-hmm. And it's just the grace I have for myself to, you know, live at peace with the fact that I just wrote a book about something that I did not do well for you. Like, I didn't do well for you. And that's how I end the book. And we'll talk about that in the last day. But I can live with my failure and I can live with the ways that this is messy and incomplete and imperfect, because ultimately throughout all of it, I am seeking God and I'm going to Him first and I am growing with Him every step. And I think that has to be our measure of, am I choosing rightly or am I choosing wrongly? It's, am I choosing to bring God into this? And am I choosing to bring other people into this? And as you do that, you're going to end up in places that lead to thriving and not to sin and death. So the steps in the book are pretty simple. It's, we choose to do this with God. We invite Him in. We talk to Him. When you were reading that quote, faith isn't summoned, it grows. It grows because of a relationship, not your willpower. It's just the idea that we're not trying to fix something. We're actually trying to be present with God in something. Yeah. And as we are present with Him in it, He's going to help us navigate it and bring to light truth. And the next thing is we choose the raw and varnished truth. And one of the things I talk about is just the power of your generation and how genuine and raw you are, how over and over again, I will go on college campuses and have people confess sin and they all do it and they do the real stuff, you know, and they want to be free. And I think that's where we've got to just begin, is just, we choose to walk with God and we choose to submit to God, ultimately to submit our lives and our will and our desires, right? Emotions and desires are so closely attached to each other. I've watched a friend, she's been in a hard marriage and we've kept up with each other and it's been hard to watch from a distance, like her just go through this. But she's continued, even though the marriage is so hard, she's continued to stay and to fight. She's continued to go to counseling. She's continued to prioritize Him, to love Him, to make Him a priority. And she's doing that not because of her feelings. She's doing that because she's submitted to the Lord. She's said, I'm not going to live based primarily on my feelings.
Yeah.
I'm going to live submitted to the Lord. At the same time, she's not ignoring her feelings. She's talking about her feelings. She's wanting her marriage to be better. She's wanting to be honest and real about how it is right now. And that's the beginning of healing, right? So all of that is possible. It's possible to choose to submit to God and still be in a really hard situation and for you to feel really difficult emotions and that be pleasing to God, even in the midst of a difficult marriage, because you're staying, because you're fighting, because you're loving and serving, even though it doesn't feel good. So I think that's the best example I can give of what this looks like, where you do this with God, you stay close to Him, and you also are really honest about where things are. The healthiest I've seen conversations lately, as I've done all this work and I've been sensitive to it and noticing it, is when, you know, someone will say to me, I feel blank about this. Don't worry. I'm going to do the right thing. This is what I'm feeling. And it's just the honesty about, like, this is hard. I wish it were easier. I wish I felt more in love. I wish I felt happier. But I believe God has me in this and I'm going to stay and I'm going to do the right thing. And that can apply to work. That can apply to learning differences. That can apply to any situation you find yourself in where it's like you can be honest about the feeling and still obedient to God in the midst of circumstances that are difficult.
Okay, can I ask you a vulnerable question?
Sure.
So let's go back to college when you were wrestling with an eating disorder. First, just tell me, what were some of the emotions and maybe the underlying things that were a part of that eating disorder at the time?
Yeah, I think I had a really high desire to be accepted, a need. It had become a need, I think, in my life where I was very addicted to approval and addicted to people admiring me. And that felt like part of the equation at that point in my life. And it felt like something I could control. There were things I couldn't control, and it felt like something I could control. And the emotions behind that, I think a sadness that I hadn't measured up to people that I wanted to desperately measure up to. I think it was a sadness that there were times in my life where, this is funny when I think about it as little Jenny, like as a kid in my home, where I would notice things that I thought, well, just control that. Like, just fix that problem. It doesn't need to be so complicated. Just fix the problem. And in my simple mind at the time, I felt like, we can fix problems. I'm going to fix the problem. So I think that was part of my way of coping with some difficult circumstances around me, was what can I control? And that was something that felt like it was in my control. The thing about anything, and it's not just food and alcohol and sex. It's anything can begin to take a life of its own, you know, just even how much you watch Netflix, like technology, anything can begin to master you. And so that control and that ability to control it, I think, began to be in charge of my life rather than me being in charge of my life.
Yeah. And so for anyone listening that feels like they've had such a habit of choosing for that to be how that emotion, like that's the choice they make with that emotion. It's to go scroll on Instagram and not feel it, or to in that feeling of out of control and anxiety that maybe it manifests in an eating disorder. Could you talk about maybe what that road looked like for you coming out of that eating disorder, or things that you wish that you could tell, like hold college Jenny's face and tell her?
This is, you know, what's so great is we didn't script this or plan this, but this really is the perfect example, because the awareness, now I've certainly, there are some of you that are in disorders of any kind that it feels like, man, it is not as simple as what I'm about to say. And I want you to know that it was really a year to 2 years of healing. It wasn't something that just immediately was over. Now, the decisions I was making changed pretty quickly. And the outward working of my eating disorder changed pretty quickly because I was pregnant with your brother. And so I wanted to take care of my body. And so I fixed the eating, if that makes sense. But the mental space that it was taking up, that was at war for a long time. And I'll be honest, like, I mean, every once in a while, I'll see it in myself where it's not always with food, but it's just something where it's like, I can fix that. It's an urgent, insatiable, like, I want this to be better and I'm going to fix it and make it right. And so I know how I got there. So I want to be super compassionate that it's not as simple as what I'm about to say. But the verse that began to change it for me was what I based Get Out of Your Head on, which was take every thought captive. And I was reading my big green study Bible and I remember underlining it and going, oh my gosh, are you telling me I don't have to think about this all the time? Like, that was the first realization that I wasn't a victim to my thoughts. And I think in this part of the journey, it's really important to emphasize that while dealing with our emotions is very different than dealing with our thoughts, if there's a toxic thought, you kill it like a bug. Like, you get it out, you fight it. And what I'm saying with feelings is, no, these are telling you something. We're going to listen to them. We're going to navigate them. We're going to feel them. We're going to share them. We're going to let them do their work in us and through us and with other people. But I am not suggesting that we are victims to those feelings. There is a place of volition. And that's why at the beginning of the book, I had the train, and the beginning of the train was our will, because our will is our volition, our ability to make a decision, our ability to stop. Our ability to bite our tongue and not demean our child, our ability to stop. And there is a real choice here that we can make. And it starts, the reason the chapter, I wanted to keep it simple. In the next chapter, we're going to get into more just things to be aware of, like counseling and eating well and making sure you're getting exercise, because that can affect your serotonin. Like, we're going to talk about really practical things in the next chapter. But on this one, I just wanted to keep it so easy so you can remember, go to God, submit to God, His word, be with Him in this, and be honest with yourself and with other people. And you can do both. And so I think with the eating disorder, it was, I have more power than I thought, and I'm going to fight back. Rather than let this thing win, I'm going to fight back.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for over a year and a half now, I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, nutritionists with decades of experience in their fields. People ask me constantly if AG1 is the real deal, and trust me, there is a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's been tested for 950 contaminants and substances, while the industry standard typically only tests for 10. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies it by covering my nutritional basis and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. We've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/madeforthis. That's drinkag1.com/madeforthis. Check it out.
I was listening to Comer about something he was practicing the way, which I feel like if you hear that, like, be with God, that's such a good book. Something that was so freeing for me as somebody who can get so emotionally overwhelmed. And then if somebody tells me something to do on top of that, it like can kind of turn me off to it and I'll just Absolutely. Feel paralyzed. Yeah. And I think that's where maybe some of y'all are. But he said something that was so freeing, and he was talking about that willpower that we do have, but it's to will us towards availability. Like,
that's right.
And it's not about adding all this religious right. activity. It's That's about right. subtracting. And yes. so in needing, he was just talking about how in order to, for our like human finite brains, we have to remove noise and we have to remove hurry and all these distractions in order for us to be aware of God's presence that's already there. There was something so freeing about his wording in that of like the spiritual disciplines are about subtraction rather than addition. It's these ways that we've normalized like all these things that draw us away from God that are a part of our daily lives. And it's setting aside some time with God to be available for him. And so that's kind of what we're talking about when we're talking about doing it with God and being with him in it. Check out Practicing the Way if you're not familiar.
Absolutely.
The spiritual disciplines.
I'm a John Mark Comer fan.
Yeah, the biggest. We love him.
Yeah, and it's funny. The next chapter actually was this chapter, and I changed it because I thought it just, I don't want y'all to get into this rat race. I don't want you to be thinking about drinking more water, and that's why you're, you know. But at the same time, I also couldn't skip all that. It's like there really is a practical thing to our emotions that we need to talk about. And I think what I wanted to do is just keep this so simple and like be honest and be with God in it. And that's going to go really far, further than you can imagine. But you have to actually form words to God. It can't just be look up and go about your day. It's like, no, I need to meditate. Mm-hmm. I need to pray. I need to be with him. I need to be in the word. I need to be with God.
Yeah. And I love that this is first too, because I can say for me and my friends, sometimes when I'm feeling that like stuckness or just in a season of more of like a depressive, like it's hard just to do normal things. And I feel like I need to kind of pull up my bootstraps and get myself together, the first thing I'll run to is kind of like self-care stuff because I might not want to face my shame.
Right.
And I might not actually want to face my emotions. I'm like, oh, I'm going to feel better if I exercise and if I drink water, if I'm eating clean. And that's where I'm going to start. But that in some form I've started realizing in my heart is some way of believing that I need to get myself together before I go to God.
I'm going to have the simplest verse here. Matthew 6:33, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. And all these things will be given to you as well. It really is true. Like, you seek first God, not your emotions, not happiness, not your desires. Seek first God. And your emotions, your happiness comes. And it comes not just because he's a magic button that you push and all of a sudden you feel happy, which I think I used to believe that that's what Christians should feel and do, is just pray and then they're better. Memorize a verse and then they're better. No. It's the invitation of inviting God in to all that you're going through, letting him be in it with you, and how healing that alone, just that in itself is. There is something about the presence of God that changes everything and changes your perspective. So we look for the presence of God in our sadness. We look for the presence of God in our anger. We look for the presence of God in our joy. We look for the presence of God in our fear. We practice the presence of God. I actually have that book beside my bed right now. If you've never read that as well, Practice the Presence of God. It's classic. That is the first and most important choice that we can make.
One more person that I was thinking of that could be listening to this is if you feel in some way, like some of the suffering that you've been through, you feel hurt by God. Like you feel like it's hard to trust God because you've been through so much and you feel this anger and the sadness, and it's hard to let God into that space because it feels like in some way he's allowed that. Something for me that has been really helpful is going back to those places. A lot of times with a friend, because I think that's a really safe thing, or a counselor, reading scripture and imagining Jesus in those rooms. Because sometimes you have to go back and you have to see his character and the truth about him in those spaces in order to move forward with God. And I found that can be a really helpful tool. And so whether it's asking a counselor to walk through that with you or a friend, of just picturing him sitting in that room, maybe where something so heartbreaking happened has been a really powerful thing in my life.
Well, today I would love to actually lead people in this right now, to lead a time of reflection and prayer. And so if you need to push pause as I'm praying to spend more time in a moment, do it. But I'm going to lead you and I'm going to provide some pause, but some of you might need a very long pause, and that's okay. Hopefully this will be a gift for you to commune with God and to feel some of your feelings and to invite God into them. I just want you to put your feet on the ground and to close your eyes. I want you to picture a place that for you causes a lot of pain, that you remember something from your past that every time you think about it, it just hurts. And I want you just to think about that moment. And I want you to feel whatever you feel about it. I want you to cry if you need to cry. I want you to be mad if you need to be mad. And I want you to tell God what you feel about that moment. And now I want you to picture Jesus sitting right across from you, and I want you to imagine his face. I want you to, how is he looking at you as you've told him all of this? How does he feel about you? What is his expression? And God, we know that you care for us. You have promised us that your compassion never fails, that your mercies are new every single morning. And I picture whatever, all of the very, very, very horrific and difficult things that are being shared out there right now, God, for the person that is just so angry, that is so hurt. I just picture your face, and I picture it with tears in your eyes, and you are crying with us, and there is compassion in your eyes for what we feel. And I thank you that your presence is better than any other place on earth we could ever be. I thank you that your forgiveness and your grace is bigger than any grace we could ever receive. I thank you that your love, it literally never ends. It stretches as far as the east is from the west, Scripture tells us in Ephesians. So thank you that we cannot get to the end of it. Help us know that love so that we are able, together with all the saints, to believe with all of our hearts that you are enough for us. And God, I pray that we would invite you in more and more, not just to the moments that we experience now, but even into our past and into the places that it feels like cannot heal. Would you heal the places that we don't even believe could heal? And would we be like the woman at the well after we are healed? Would we run and would we tell everybody about it? I just thank you that we are no longer a slave to fear, that we are no longer a slave to sin, that we are your kids, and that you have gifted us with spirits of power, of love, of self-discipline. And we can choose. We have a choice. We are not slaves. And so while these emotions are gifts meant to connect us deeply with you and to heal us and to help us navigate this world, we also know that we are not victims to these emotions. And so we submit all of them to you. We just submit our lives to you as well. In Jesus' name, amen.